Hey, you're listening to Samcast with me, Sam Eagle. Here you'll hear the stories, methods, and thoughts of some of my favourite musicians from all across the musical spectrum. This is a really special episode of Samcast, in which I'm joined by South African rapper Eugen Blackrock. This was a truly fascinating and enlightening conversation, and I think there's a lot to learn from Eugen's words, experiences, and thoughts that she shared. I certainly learned a huge amount, and hearing what Eugen has to say about music has completely changed my perspective about making music entirely. Eugen's music is complex, dark, magical, unique, and diverse. Having produced two brilliant albums of her own, Return of the Astrogoth in 2013 and Anima Mysterium in 2019, she has also contributed to an eclectic range of other projects such as the fantastic Kella Kettler with Crystallized and on the Black Panther soundtrack alongside Kendrick Lamar and Vince Staples on track Ops. I should say that unfortunately our sound wasn't quite up to the usual standard for this episode of Samcast, but I think it's a small price to pay to be able to hear from our very special guest, Eugen Blackrock. Eugen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It really means a lot to be able to talk with you. How's it going? How's life in Johannesburg right now?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sam. No, actually, I'm not in Johannesburg. Oh. I'm in Marseille.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm in Marseille. We've been here for a while now. Yeah, we're just based here for a while.
What are you up to in Marseille right now?
A lot of chilling and trying to figure out like these restrictions and stuff, you know. Today they just said quarantine for folks traveling and all of this. We're kind of just trying to find the balance between working from home and also trying to be in contact with like live performances that are able to happen like in spaces that can allow it, you know, when where they can take the precautions and stuff like that. It's pretty important, you know. So there's just a lot of that. Also just processing from your own personal perspective, channeling that into the writing as well, into music. Also taking in a lot of what's happening, as much as folks aren't as outside as they usually are, things are a little bit out of the norm, there's still enough to observe, you know, about what's happening. There's still a lot to adjust to, you know?
Yeah. Have you found it's been a creative time, or do you think it's been the opposite? How's it been in that respect?
A bit of both. I mean, like, I think the creativity didn't just jump out like, hey, you know, we've got time now. It kind of took a while to get into that space because, I mean, when the year started, we all had a plan, we had a tour scheduled and all of this. So the mind state is kind of in go mode, you know, you're in tour mode. And so you run two shows and all of that kind of stops. Now you need to redirect that energy. And before doing that, you kind of need to figure out what to do with it. You know, all the plans cancelled, don't freak out. These were avenues, you know, for survival as well, like resources, cash, all of this kind of stuff. You've got merch, you know, that's not really like, oh man, you're not meeting the folks, you're not getting the space to perform and work as well, you know. So it takes a whole lot of just seeing all of that and kind of settling into it. But if I'm all out of sync, I could be in the best place ever and nothing's going to come out, you know.
Have you found ways to kind of compensate for losing out on touring?
Yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate that we've had folks ask us for content when certain festivals have gone digital. Some of them have maintained like the artist rosters, you know. So instead of coming up and performing, you can create something for the festival to be streamed on the day. You know, it's not quite going out on tour, but, you know, considering how everything else is going, it's quite nice to have stuff that keeps you busy, you know, keeps you focused on what it is that you're doing, as opposed to, I feel like the current state is kind of forcing all this anxiety on everybody, you know, whether struggling with it or not before, you know. So it almost feels like a pressure big enough to distract you from what keeps you alive and inspired, you know.
Man.
Some folks find it easier to draw from a dark space, you know, or when I'm sad, it's easier to write. Some folks maybe from a good time are inspired by these things. But like for myself that certainty is something that works for me. I'm sure of what I'm doing and all of this, so this hasn't been affected so much.
That's really good.
The ability to look and see what's happening and be able to kind of try and transform it into something artistic is still there, you know. This phase hasn't taken away from me in that sense. It's given me something else to think about, you know. It's not so far removed from what we're all expecting anyway, you know, the way things have been going over the last couple of years, over the last couple of decades, you know, environmentally, in terms of like human interaction, human rights, you know, classism, all these things that we're constantly dealing with, feels like along with this epidemic is kind of snowballed into something that, like, all the stuff that we have to face very urgently. It's been there all along. It's just so happened that everything's aligned in a way that you can't deny it. There's, you know, no one has the luxury to think long term anywhere in the world. It's the craziest thing. You can't plan 6 months ahead. You can't plan 2 months ahead. You can't plan next month. You know, it's a crazy time to be in, and we're all experiencing this, all of us. You know, some folks, this has been a way of life forever, to live day to day, to not know when the next paycheck is coming from, you know. But now this is kind of gone across all classes, all tax brackets, you know, everywhere. It's just like, yeah, it's a lot to think about.
Firstly, I don't think I've heard anyone summarize lockdown and the coronavirus situation as accurately as that before. To get onto you as an artist, there's so much to your career. To go like right back to the beginning, what were kind of the significant events that got you first writing and thinking about music?
I think I've enjoyed music, I think, like most people, from a young age, from influences, from aunts, mom, family, you know. Wanting to be a part of the hip-hop culture, maybe I would say, I really got fascinated by 90s hip-hop, you know, like mid to late 90s, really. You know, Wu-Tang and Nas, there was Biggie, there was all these really dope crews and really dope artists that had this really heavy sound. Lyrically, it was very strong. It was very different encountering hip-hop as opposed to maybe pop music or R&B or blues or country western. The fact that you could fit so many words in such a short space of time really fascinated me. You know, the rhyme schemes and all of the stuff kind of connected as well. I mean, maybe in high school and you're studying Shakespeare there and you're going through the sonnets and da-da-da-da-da-da. Your English teacher's kind of taking you through all of this and it kind of clicks, like, oh, flow.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay, great, nice, I can, you know, and I really got into it, you know. I was like, I'm really into English class, but I'm really, like, okay, looking for ways to make a rap. I enjoyed writing as well as much as reading. I would write poetry. I just call it poetry just because it rhymed a bit, you know. I was a bit shy. I wasn't as forthcoming as I am now, you know. So, yeah, through that, the teenage years and the music that I was exposed to, the hip-hop that I was listening to, resonated with me, you know, the ideas that they were talking about, you know, whether it's Eastern philosophies or there's astrological references to that or something about old religions or, you know, like a little phrase that you'll hear in someone's verse that will make you want to go to the library and maybe try find a book on that to kind of get into context what this person meant, you know?
So is that where your influence from, like, out-of-world things like mythology, like cosmic stuff, magical stuff, kind of the spiritual side of hip-hop, was? Where did that kind of influence and interest come from? Because that's kind of, influentially, that's what really, like, interests me about your stuff. Where did that come from?
Yeah, that was a mix between the books I was reading. Also, my mom used to buy us a lot of books with birthdays. And then also the music I'd listen to as well, or movies that you'd watch the classics or whatever, Wizard of Oz, or something weird and, you know, that was current at the time. So there was always, like in pop culture as well, there's always been that reference to magic, but it wasn't mainstream, you know? So I kind of like obscure things just in general. growing up also we'd have our own like stories of bedtime stories from Xhosa or Zulu kind of folklore that our nannies or mom or grandmother used to kind of tell us as well, and we'd like tell each other as well. There was always stories being told. What I was interested in, I just pursued further, you know. So if I find a little section on something, I'd go out of my way to find a bigger section of it or the original source and know what the story is so I can tell it as well or learn my lesson from it. Yeah, so yeah, environment a lot, but mostly books.
That's super interesting.
And you can't help but see it happen in real life as well, you know. So what I'm trying to say, books kind of gave me a language to explain what you can see, what you can feel, and what you can sense, you know. It's tough to describe the unseen, right? It's tough to describe a gut feeling or a vision or like out-of-body experience unless you've read, oh, this is what it is. You can find it hard to describe. So, yeah.
No, that's really true. Do you write your lyrics in the same kind of style as the poetry you'd read and write originally? Or is your lyrical style more like kind of stream of consciousness kind of thing?
I do feel like when I do write, I am listening for that, you know, stream of consciousness kind of connection. You know, you get the phrases or the idea that you can scribble like, oh, this is what I want to say really quickly, but it's incomplete, but I'll write it down so that it doesn't disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, catch those quickly and then put them together. This sort of makes sense or build on it. Or sometimes you have a phrase that has a lot that you can unpack from it, you know? There's an idea that I have that I want to get across, but it's quite abstract, so I know I've got a lot of options in how I can communicate it.
I could very much get like that stream of consciousness kind of vibe, but it's like, it kind of made me wonder, there's so much going on and it is so complex that I was interested by that. How do you work with Kanif, your producer? Do you write lyrics whilst he's making the music? Do you work on the music together?
Both. Like, I can have ideas that I'm sort of writing about, just loosely, just like points that are, so I'll commit that to paper. And then maybe I'll come to Kanif, listen to what he's making in the studio. And we like to keep it like also separate, like everything winds up together anyway, you know. So he'll be working on some beats, I'll come through, listen to some, maybe hear the ideas on music, like, oh, this is where it could go. So that's when like the phrase I've written down will kind of, this is how I want to be rapped, you know. So the beat will kind of influence the lyrics. Then what he does is he's working all day, he's making beats all day, every day, you know. So there's constant sketches and skeletons coming out sometimes when he's mixing stuff, even with Joe Nasaski. You know, he's a really good friend of ours and producer as well. He did Carbon Form. You know, I enjoy being able to talk and having a back and forth relationship with somebody. I really don't like that distant kind of collaboration. I'll send you some beats and then I'll send the vocal over. It's great and all, but it can lack soul sometimes. It can lack connection. You know, if I can't sit over your shoulder and be like, ah, and if you can't hear the idea before it becomes the cleaned up verse, you know. So with Kanif, I know when he's making something, he works with a lot of different artists already. So he already knows where each person's frequency kind of is. For me, he already knows what I like and what I don't like. So there's an openness. I enjoy having stuff made for me, you know. I don't think anyone doesn't. And I enjoy being allowed to do that in return as well. There's nothing better than having something made for you as opposed to, you know.
When did you guys first start collaborating?
We met. I liked where his head was at. I like his ear. So when we first met, we're like, oh, let's just make a couple tracks, see what comes out, you know. I'm pretty chilled like that, you know. I prefer organic stuff, and let's see what works, what doesn't. And so we started with just a couple of songs, and then, there was just so much to learn.
Learn for you?
Yeah.
From him, right.
because I always want to do better than I know, you know. There's always more to know, so I want to be better than where I'm at right now. So when I met him, I really thought, we could totally make something dope, but I had no idea exactly what it is we wanted to make. I knew the feeling, you know. So when we linked up, we made Return of the Astro God, and that took about 3 years to get together, you know, to figure out the style.
Mm.
Made hundreds of beats, you know. I'm picky in the sense that I know what I don't like, you know, definitely, but what I do like, I don't always know how to explain, but I know it when I hear it, you know what I mean? Mm. So there was that also. So like learning each other's styles, making room for each other in our styles as well, that took a while. And we'd go out and we'd perform some of the new songs. Even we'd perform a lot in Soweto, in Johannesburg, in the town, you know, like in the central area. And we'd notice, like, with certain songs we played for the first time, folks in the audience will react as though they already know the song. And then that's where you find there's a bit of magic in that, you know. Mm. Clearly picked up on something that's available for everybody, you know. All information is available. That kind of thing is nice to watch. So we sort of like experimenting with vibes as well as we go along. Oh, this did that, this does this now, and we'll tweak it in the studio and sort of allow it to breathe, you know.
Mm.
I feel like I've been rambling some, you
know? No, not at all. It's so interesting to hear like all this. So what was the journey from Return of the Astro Goth to Anima Mysterium?
With Anima Mysterium, we were touring a lot in Europe as well, Germany and France and like Switzerland and Sweden and all these places. We'd meet folks then that maybe wouldn't speak English. That was also like, I think, an eye-opening experience as well. In South Africa, like, English is one of the official languages. And then we'd come out here and like maybe we'd play like in a small town in France. And like you don't meet anyone who speaks English at all, you know, at all. So that would be interesting as hell, man, because then in that case, they're kind of listening to me how I listen to like a German rapper or a French rapper or a Ukrainian rapper, you know. You're listening for technique and skill and whether rhyme scheme or it sounds like it rhymes. Don't understand the subject matter. I don't know what's being talked about. I can just hear that what's being said is being said well. So there's that. So I'm aware, okay, so this is what's happening now. And, you know, granted, the topics I choose to rap about are not necessarily easy listening either. The style is not necessarily simple for an English speaker, so let alone for English second language speaker, you know. So it's like, okay, now I'm aware that I'm not rolling off my vocabulary, you know.
Yeah.
Here I have to kill it on vibe, just the technical way, you know, that is just clean, that's dope, you know. So that experience sharpened the skills in a certain way and also allowed us to kind of go deeper into the vibration and the frequency part of the music, you know, like what grooves will get the folks moving, and like really slow, moody stuff. We'll meet some DJs who'll be like, they play really fast stuff, you know, the act before us or the act after, whatever. And we'll come through with some really slow stuff, and everybody moves either way. Folks have this misconception that to move people, you have to rap really fast or in double time and all of that. And it's really great. Those are really brilliant techniques, but it's not the only way to move somebody, you know? So we're really about that. Like, test the philosophy out, you know? Come check us out for sure. So a lot of that, all that learning and tests and trial and error stuff, that went into Anima Mysterium. So it's a bit more heavy. I feel like it's less mental, I think, than Astro God. I found, you know, it was quite airy, you know, talking about concepts and ideas and things. But with Mysterium, there's a lot of emotional stuff in there because there's a lot of physical strife and emotional turmoil that's also going on there. Being away from home, being away from your comfort zone and your personal space for months on end, you know, how disconnected you have to automatically be, and the kinds of battles that you're going through, that, you know. So it's not a Astrobot kind of surviving in the urban jungle that is Johannesburg. So I really enjoyed that. And the space that I'm in now is where I'm kind of processing where to go. You know?
Right. So your style is moving on from anima still, or you're just in the kind of in-between phase?
Yeah. I do take long to make like projects or albums because I like to experience it as well, you know?
Mm.
Often, like these phrases that don't make sense and you're writing them down in the book and they sound really nice in prose form and you're rapping and all of that.
Mm.
So I allow time for the topics to come to life as well, for me to live them, to, okay, because these songs I'm going to be performing hundreds of times, definitely. So they need to ring true on the most basic level, the real fundamental stuff, to always be able to reach down to my truth.
Mm.
And that's that, you know, so whether things change, I can still say that with a full and open heart, like, yo, this is the lesson I learned. Nothing's going to change that, you know.
Mm.
I have changed from that, possibly, probably, but it still rings true for that.
Mm. I think that's what gives a lot of, like, very timeless music its timelessness, doesn't it? Like, if something's, like, a super pure and, like, unfiltered expression of something, it's just it's never going to not be that, is it? Are there any, like, really significant moments or, like, experiences that you've had that just kind of inspired a whole song instantly, or
a lot? All over the songs will be little things. I wouldn't write a whole song about a fight, but I write about loss a lot, little bits here and there, because it's something that's constantly there, you know. Once you've lost friends or family, it's always there. The absence of that person is always there, and so it's always there in the lyrics. After Return of the Astrogoth, maybe five days after we released the album, our friend wrote with the technician passed away. She was a part of our collective and crew and independent label. He's a brother, you know, a lot of us, you know, in the crew. It was the first time losing somebody, a friend, lost a grandfather. It was a tough loss, you know, for everybody. And it kind of opened my eyes to the harshness of death, of life, of humanity itself, as opposed to, you know, always talking about it in a romanticized kind of way. It kind of gave my thoughts another intensity, whereas if I mention it, I'm actually talking about it in terms of, hey, there's an acceptance that you have to have about this, you know? And Robo was very much one of those kind of people, like a sage, really, you know, like he knew a lot, he shared a lot also, and he was so at peace, you know. I was angry at him a little bit because it always felt like he knew he was going to leave, and I was mad, you know, not that it would have changed anything if I had known before. No one's ever prepared to let go, really, you know? So having known that person makes your life better. So there's certain things that you do to honor them. Little words that you'll throw in a verse, or little things that you'll do on a daily to just keep them, because we exist in memory, but that's what we have when folks are not around. So a lot of my thinking is along these lines, the appreciation of life, the welcoming, you know, not shunning away from darkness, and, you know, darkness and light together, all of this kind of stuff. I will look at it like little everyday things in that regard as well, you know?
Mm.
Like, you live the philosophy, like, it's a lifestyle. You don't really separate the mystical stuff from the scientific stuff, from the spiritual stuff. It's all rolling together.
Mm. What can you tell people about Robo the Technician?
He was a brilliant MC. He was a really, really dope soul. And his perspective is always refreshing. You know? The mind is like an empty room that needs furniture and pictures. You know, like, when I say stuff like that, you're always going to be looking to fill certain spaces, be mindful of what you fill those spaces with. You know, a really, really dope writer, special voice. He worked with Kanifa as well, so it's a fat, you know. I really, like, you should just give it a listen. It's really nice stuff to think about, a really dope perspective, South African. Yeah, it gives you a really dope picture of where he is from. He represented himself well.
I didn't know that. I'm really, really sorry about that, Eugen.
It's hard to hear. There's a big loss for the culture. He's well remembered and loved, you know, and loved.
Could I ask you about collaborations?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, you've worked with a lot of people on your own stuff, and you've done, like, wide-ranging stuff, like jazzy stuff, like Kelakatla, and, like, old-school stuff, new-school stuff, like the Black Panther soundtrack, obviously. Is there, like, a particular person that you have learnt the most from with a collaboration? Or a particular project that you've learnt the most from?
A lot. Man, from everyone, there's, like, a lesson, and, you know. I enjoyed working on the Kelakatla. It was really cool working with Cool Cut.
That was really, really cool. So many, like, different styles.
It was fantastic because I got the connection that I like to have when working, the back and forth. Which I really enjoyed working with Jana and Matt on that one. For the connection, for the... Also, the just the freshness of just flipping around stuff. It's quite similar to how we work as well, you know. I originally did the hip-hop version of that song, Crystallize. And then these guys made that jungle mix on an app that they created.
Oh, wow.
Album. Yeah.
That's dedicated.
This is my favorite thing. You know, like, just super experimental and it sounds fat. I really enjoyed hearing myself on something different. I like that, you know, I like experimentation. The Black Panther stuff, that was also, you know, comfort zone, find it, get it, and then jump out of it after, you know. So I guess that's the method, you know.
How do you mean?
That's not a sound that, it's not my sound.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, beats-wise or musically.
Mm-hmm.
But I am able to do it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
MC, I can rap. Whatever, I can rap on a house beat, I can rap on a trap beat, I can rap on any. I just like particular things, you know, certain things work well for me. Like my most comfortable on moody, just dark, that's my best, that's my favorite spot to be.
Mm.
And then there's certain styles I can do, but I just am not fond of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like to do stuff for the hell of it, you know. I don't feel I have anything to prove, you know, so I do stuff because I want to, genuinely, or I want to see what's going to happen, or it's really all about me all the time, you know.
That's really good, really, really good.
So when I get to learn from folks, or I get to experiment with somebody's sound, in that instance, like I said, making space for somebody else, it's exciting to make space for something that's completely different, because you don't know how exactly it's going to fit. But if there's respect between the two musicians, then, you know, that respect is like a safety net. You can jump as high as you want. Stuff can work, it cannot work. But if there's like a mutual respect, you'll find a way to kind of tweak it, you know, make it work, or just can it or try something else. You know, it allows for greater movement, for better expression, for experimentation, you know.
Mm.
Often, you know, the thing with features is, you know, like from the school of hip-hop that I'm from, if you're featuring on a track, you must just kill everything, or kill or be the best, or be the... And that's great, you know, in that competitive kind of way. But also sometimes for a feature, just do something you've never done before. You can also come from a feature doing exactly what you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
That works. That's great, you know. Seeing how much you can explore outside of your comfort zone is like also the next level from exploring, from just here, you know, from the... So then, I love, like, I don't do a lot of features and collaborations, but the ones that I do, they're like sentimentally based, you know, like it's all sentimental. It's all, I really respect this person, or I really love their music, and that's really where it's at, you know.
I think that really comes across in how kind of wide-ranging your collaborations have been. Like, I think that's so cool, so cool. Like, they're super diverse. Is there a single most important thing for you to put across in your music?
Love, man. You know? simple, but like also on so many levels, whether it's self-love or love for the other, love for your environment, love for love's sake, you know, that I rap because I love that. To rap, I've learned to love my voice, to love myself, to see myself, to appreciate other people and their gifts. There's gratitude, like whatever I'm writing about, whether it's survival, that's like a heavy theme because, you know, that's what we are, also survivors. I'm always trying to reinforce what we are. And those are also just notes for me, you know. As much as like music is enjoyed, you know, whatever I put out, I'm putting out to share with people. But it's also like a note to you. And, you know, whenever somebody's like enjoying my stuff or, you know, live shows and we're jamming and we're having a great time, I'm especially appreciative of that because I'm like, yeah, this is stuff that I want to hear. And this person is enjoying hearing it, like, you know, we're both here right now in this instance, you know, it's a sort of connection. That's love. It's a vibration, it's a wave, a feeling, you know, a frequency of being. You act out of love when you want to do good things for your friend, for your family, for humanity in general. You want to act out of love when someone has pissed you off or taken you off your center or made you fear. You want to act out of love for yourself, you know what I mean?
Mm.
To not hold a grudge, to not, all of that stuff. And I'm writing all these words to just say that thing, you know, love, whatever, like, things are gonna happen, you know, but if we don't have that, then we don't really have anything.
Wow, man, I've learned a lot from this conversation, Egan. Like, just that answer there has like put a lot into perspective. That's a really, yeah, that's such a good thing to hear. Because I've not really heard anyone say that behind their music before. But, man, you speak a lot of truth.
Really, it's been really cool to get to meet you and hang out a bit in this talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely you too, Eugen. It's been really fascinating and really cool. Thank you so, so much for coming on.
All right. Pleasure.
I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Samcast with our guest, Eugen Blackrock. Be sure to follow Samcast on your streaming service to make sure you never miss an episode with new Samcast every Tuesday. I've been Sam Eagle, and thank you so much for listening.